the 10th voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, this is the 10th voice. My name is Philip Bluehlhuser. I am here with my co-host, Elizabeth Anderson, who has a very important message right now.
I think most people know about the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and there are marches happening all over the country and around the world. The one here in Kansas City, we wanted to let you know that one of our 10th voice family is speaking. Una Nowling, who is the host of Fourth Week Trans Talk, will be speaking about transgender rights. So just wanted to let you know if you're down at the march.
Yay! And as soon as the show is over today, I know that Elizabeth and I will be heading down there. And we think it's an important thing to do, to stand up, be represented. And it's kind of the thing that we've got right now is being represented. So before we launch into the big heart of the show today, which is going to be about poetry, turn that radio back on. I wanted to give you just a little bit of news, events that have happened in the world. The driver who tore through a Melbourne, Australia street, killing 4 people and injuring at least 20 more pedestrians yesterday, had just stabbed his brother because the brother is gay. According to their mother, Demetrius Gargasolis, wish I'd practiced that name more, stabbed his brother in the face, then drove around Melbourne in a stolen car before driving into the pedestrians. On the eve of the inauguration this week, about 200 LGBT protesters marched to Vice President-elect Mike Pence's D.C. home, turning up the music, and danced all night long at what was called a queer dance party.
I wish I could have been there, don't you?
Oh, but I wish you could have been there, too. I'd love to see you dancing, child. To protest Pence's anti-LGBT record, the organizer of the events, Firas Nasser, said they wanted to send a clear message to Pence that we will not tolerate bigotry and hate in our country. And less than 30 minutes after being named to taking the oath of office for the presidency of the United States, Donald Trump's people in the White House began disappearing pages on the White House website, including those dedicated to civil rights, disabilities, climate change, Native Americans, and LGBT people. This also included the Department of Labor's report on advancing LGBT workplace rights. And that, such as it is the news that we have for you today. And we will begin chatting with our guests, who are all finally arrived in the studio.
Hello.
Yay!
Hello!
So we have with us poets, writers, press people, people who run presses, specifically 39th West Press. We have with us poet and activist and bar tendril, Jeanette Powers. Hello, Jeanette.
Oh, hello, hello.
We also have with us Max Martin, my own friend for at least 6 years now, or maybe more, probably more than that. Also a poet, a trans man of much, much background and events in your life. Hello, Max.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you. And I am pleased to say that we do have J.D. Tulloch in our studio as well, who has just arrived after much confusion over doors. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
J.D. is also a poet. And why do we have so many poets? Well, by golly, in the year 2016, following the Pulse massacre and all of the events, and particularly since the election, people have been turning to poetry and linking to poems online, some of them being shared close to 1 million times each, because poetry, I believe, provides us with some kind of comfort. It creates a little order in the world of chaos that we may see around ourselves, and it becomes something that we look for and crave. And out of that, these creative people with whom we are talking today have also created something something called Desolate Country, for which the subtitle is We the People United Against Trump. And through an organization you might find called Art Uprising. So, everyone, just reintroduce yourself. I wanted to ask you, we're going to start with the biggest, simplest question. What's poetry?
Dead silence. No, it's the opposite of dead silence. Poetry is, I believe, the first history of now. It is the first voice of people who come out. It arises organically. Every single person out there has written a poem. It's close to them. It's been, you know, laughed at and mocked. But at the same time, it's all of our secret muse. And that's why it gives it the power. And it is the culture's response to what's happening right in front of us.
And J.D., you are a published poet.
That's correct.
Let me go ahead and give the disclaimer here. I am included in this book, this Desolate Country. So I wanted to make it clear, I'm not making any money off of this.
No one
and nor
is making
are we.
Any money.
Because the what money is generated out of this is going to a good cause, and that cause is?
Planned Parenthood.
And it is representing, and partly it sprang out of marginalized communities and being able to want to give voice to Muslims, to people of color, women, LGBTQ people, all of the people that have felt particularly attacked in this past year. When it looked like, gosh, we're making so much progress. And then all of a sudden there's a bathroom bill and the whole House of Cards falls. J.D., you are a poet.
Yes. That's why we're here.
How do you define being a poet in this world?
I think Jeanette said it very well. I mean, for me, poetry and activism are simultaneous. I mean, my poetry is very, very much rooted in social commentary and bringing to where the wrongs of the world, you know, very much like many of the beat poets did. I mean, that's kind of the focus that I look at with modern poetry, that it still maintains a place of social activism and the ephemeral nature in which we can just sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and write down our thoughts in any form, you know, whether it be rhyming or prose. Just that immediate nature of poetry, I think, resonates still today.
And Max.
Yes.
Tell us about you and poetry.
You know, I found poetry to be a way to explain the unexplainable. Also, at the same time, to bring beauty to ugliness and ugliness to beauty simultaneously. For me, reading my favorite authors is a space where I can reflect on myself as well as giving people work to reflect on themselves.
Why do you think that it was necessary to create this work, this bring together these writings by people?
Well, a friend of the show, M.G. Salazar, and I are close, and we were messaging back and forth on social media, and they had made a post saying, I'm not going to quit creating art. Everybody needs to post art all of the time because art can change the world. This is our voice. We will be heard. And we started going back, like, just trying to find a hashtag so that people could find this. And it came across this Art Uprising hashtag. And so that just that simple moment of community and solidarity became this. And I'm the kind of person that when I'm deeply hurt, when I feel like I'm powerless, I immediately turn to work. I want to create something. And it came into my mind at that moment that I have, thanks to JD and 39 West Press, I have the ability to put a book out into the world. I have the reach with the community of people that I know to get artists to submit all of their reactions, all of their feelings, and to have that voice be actually printed, published in the Library of Congress, and heard. And so that was November 9th, and here we are.
Very, very fast for getting a work like this out.
Yeah, and while she and MG are planning all the stuff behind the scenes, I send Jeanette an email immediately following the election. We have to do something. We need to get an anthology out of the people's voices, and it needs to be out before the inauguration. And so she put out a call to all of her people, and I think all of us did the same. And how many submissions did we receive? Close to 400?
We had about 400 submissions altogether from nationwide, just everywhere. It was really astonishing amount of outpouring.
And I have had people ask me, is it all just you know, Kansas City people or what? And I said, it seems to be about half.
Right, it is. I put it about 60% Kansas City people, because the entire editorial board is Kansas City based, so that's our community. But we absolutely have poets from across the nation in it, and about 40% of those. And of the submissions, it was an even wider number. And we ended up focusing on poets more because it was a majority of poet submissions. And so the few pieces of, you know, beautiful essay and beautiful prose and even some fiction didn't quite fit into the book as well. So there was so much good stuff. And really, I've been telling people there are a lot more anthologies coming out about the reactions to the election and a lot more protests, artworks being called for. So that's wonderful. More and more people are interested in this
idea. And nationally, poets coming together and reading work together.
Yes.
In the face of this. And I think it's also worth noting at this point, there was a big event yesterday. Usually there's a poet speaking at that event, and there was not this time. So poets,
that was a powerful statement.
Poets got to stand up, and we've all got to stand up. But that's, and then I thought, you know, curious by its silence, by its absence.
Well, yes. Interestingly enough, though, our poet laureate is Latino, so I don't know if that has anything to do with the administration's decision to, you know, further marginalize poets, but, but you know, something to think about.
Absolutely. As a writer, it's always my first reaction is, I need to write something that's this. Mm. And it gets that itch. For people who coffee for a living, as Max does too, how did you become involved with this?
You know, I'm also good friends with Jeanette, JD, and MG Salazar. And, you know, I was one of the first people that was invited to be a part of the group on Facebook that helped us spread the word for the art uprising. You know, my father, father of a trans man, voted for Donald Trump, and it ignited something inside of me that was really hurt-based, and I didn't know necessarily what to do with it or how to process it. And when I saw the posting, I sat down, and in 3 minutes, I wrote a poem that became published. And it was, it's all of me.
Well, that's, I know that I hadn't submitted anything for publication for over 20 years, poetry-wise.
Mm. Thank you.
But this, it called to me. And I was like, gotta do something! and it seems that among certainly the people that I know that are represented in this anthology, it does seem to be very driven by, I need to do something. And this becomes what we can do.
Absolutely. And I want to give a quick shout out to Jen Harris, who was the fourth member of the editorial board.
Also a friend of the show.
Yes, very much. And she's just a tremendous, powerful voice and an activist advocate who has been a dear friend of mine and one of the greatest people I've ever worked with. So, quick shout out to her.
Yes, thank you. She did a great job in helping narrowing down the early selections, and in her marketing efforts to promote the book afterwards were stellar.
And then now she's out of the town.
Yes, she is.
We do need to take just a brief break here, coming up at 4:15 the hour, and we shall return to talk more.
Hello, I'm Colleen Murbach, and I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you that KKFI is here for you. Every time you call on us to deliver the news, views, and music that are the soundtrack of your life, we thank you for allowing us the honor of educating and informing and entertaining you day in and day out. We are independent media, and we remain that way because you are supporting KKFI, and this is more important now than ever before. The Winter 2017 Pledge Drive is coming up on January 27th. And you have the opportunity to keep it as short as possible by donating online today at kkfi.org. This is Colleen Murbach asking you for your gift today to keep independent media alive. Please take the time to go to kkfi.org and show your support.
This is Women's Community Radio right here on KKFI. And we are talking today with poets who also do other things, who live life and write, and felt that they had to express themselves over the recent election and the fears, the hopes, the protests that a lot of people are feeling right now, particularly in a year when poetry has seen an upsurge in sales. And speaking of sales, this book, Desolate Country, We the Poets United Against Trump, is only available on Amazon, right?
You can get it on a lot of online retailers, but we actually decided that it was that we were going to do a social media push on Friday the 13th of January. And so through that immense outpouring of community help, we actually achieved this anthology to be in the top 20 all-time selling poetry books on Amazon. And that kind of work, that kind of community coming together is exactly what gets these voices heard.
And so, 1 week later, it's still the number one selling poetry anthology on Amazon of new releases. So,
you can get a piece of Kansas City history right there because it's springing up out of our community here. We have been talking about the positive aspects of poetry. We will talk more about that and using poetry along with protests and the protests and marches that are going on now. But poetry is also kind of, over the last several decades probably, has kind of become something that people have looked at and said, oh, it's so elitist. It's so, I don't understand poetry. I don't understand modern art. I don't understand modern music. Where do you think that comes from? What do you think the roots of it are? And I think sometimes people just aren't willing to meet stuff halfway. Other people, let alone poetry.
No, and again, I think up until, you know, the Beat movement of the 50s, poetry, to many respects, was elitist. It was written by academics, and the language was
highfalutin.
Yeah, in a way, you know. I mean, and especially when you go back to the romantic poets of the 18th century, and think of Chaucer, Milton, Dante. Poets that we study in grad school, people write dissertations about, and, you know, it's aloof in many ways to the masses. But I think, you know, in the modern period with, you know, starting with the Beat movement and now with hip-hop and rap lyrics, which are, to me, just an extension of poetry, I think it's starting to make poetry, once again, more accessible to the masses. And like Jeanette said, I mean, everybody writes poetry. Everybody's sitting down after a failed relationship or, you know, they've lost the love of their life and written a cheesy love poem and...
Or a song,
right.
Because that's all one. I love that you keep bringing up the Beat poets. I don't know if you heard this morning on NPR, not to, you know, plug another radio outlet necessarily, but Scott Simon shared a poem by Ferlinghetti. And that, I found that very moving this morning. Not that I haven't been on the verge of tears for the last couple of days, no matter what I do, but I found that very moving. The manifesto number one, Populist Manifesto number one. And because we didn't have a poet at the inauguration. But yes, the poetess. That's been going on in marches and the use of that. Max, share with us some thoughts.
You know, we were talking about this earlier in the green room that, you know, during protests, which I've participated in a lot of civil rights activism myself, you know, there is an energy to protest that is unmatched when you are surrounded by thousands of people who represent you while you're representing them. You know, the beauty of this book being brought up by a local publishing company, brought to us by individuals all over the country, and a lot of them here in the heart of Kansas City, is that our protest never stops. And that means that through reading our book, they may be able to, if they weren't able to be there in person, or maybe have forgotten what that energy feels like, they can find it again and rejuvenate their strength.
Because poetry is energy.
Truly.
Absolutely wonderful. Just so that we make clear that how people can get this book should they decide to, it can be found on Amazon, on
Barnes & Noble, through your IndieBound,
lots of
Books A Million.
Lots of online resources. I did also, so, of course, because I always shop for used books on Amazon when I'm shopping for anything on Amazon, I did see that there is one copy that's already listed as a used copy, which is selling for $8.80 plus postage and handling. How much would people normally pay for it? Less than that.
Yes.
Yes.
We absolutely decided that we would only charge cost for two reasons. First, it seems unethical to be commodifying art at this juncture when so much of capitalism seems to be the problem with what's going on. And so that as an ethical statement. And then second, because we are unable to pay the artists, and there's so many artists from so many places, it would be a logistical nightmare to try to like divvy out all kinds of things. But mostly because we just appreciate everyone so much, and we wanted the book to be able to be in people's hands. So we put it at just the cost for us as a press to put it out of $5. So it's very reasonable.
And it's kind of hefty for something that was put together so quickly. I must say.
Thank goodness JD is a magical genius with all kinds of book formatting. He has so much experience with it through the press, 39 West Press. And so between my insane organizational skills to be able to manage that many poets and his unbelievably beautiful design skills and just countless hours of work from everyone involved, it was our singular focus for 2 months, 6 weeks.
And then the last week, just to ensure that we got it ready by the release date, it was long days and hours.
Yeah.
Typically, we work with poets on the books that we publish. We engage in a lengthy editing process where it's a back and forth extension of the creative process, where we try to come up with we work with the artists who try to push their direction or push their writings in an even more improved direction. With the limited time frame of this anthology, we had to make a lot of editorial decisions ourselves relative to people's writings, and you know, make edits much more like a newspaper would do when publishing a letter to the editor. So that in itself, you know, took quite a bit of time. And fortunately, you know, all of the poets in the anthology were cooperative and understanding relative to the edits that we made to their works. And we thank you so much for your patience with us relative to that.
I did notice, too, looking through the stable of authors, shall we say, at 39 West Press, it is very representative of a lot of different types of people, ethnicity. Is that a conscious decision?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I think the purpose that I started the press a few years ago was to publish my writing, and a professor from college, Ricardo Quinones, who most brilliant man that I've ever met, a mentor of mine in academia, received his PhD from Harvard in comparative lit, taught at Harvard at the Claremont McKenna in California, visiting professor at the University of Kansas. He's published 8 academic books with Harvard and Princeton, University of Toronto, just a brilliant man. So I've published 5 of his poetry books. And so in the early days of the press, it was pretty much just my material and Ricardo Quinones, Professor Quinones' books. Then when I met up with Jeanette a little over a year ago, I've always had the vision to expand the press, and she became the perfect person to bring that vision to reality. But from the very focus, I mean, the intent was to provide a voice to marginalized peoples, whether they be people of color, whether they be part of the LGBTQIA community. We recently published an anthology of the Latino Writers Collective, all in Spanish. So we have a wonderful spoken word poet, Sherry Purpose Hall, whose book should come out fairly soon.
Yep, hopefully next month.
We did the Gender Treason book, which was a companion piece to Ryan Wilkes' wonderful exhibit where he painted and interviewed 12 different members of the queer community here in Kansas City. So
and
I think that's...
We put out Hugh Merrill's book, which Hugh Merrill is a long time... He's a printmaking instructor at KCAI, but also he has been on the forefront of social practice, of protest movements. He's been in every major political movement that is, and his singular focus on the view of art and what he infuses in his students is that when you're an artist, if you're in an ivory tower, you are not representing the community. You're representing an ivory tower. And so he really brings this much-needed aspect to the arts community of infusing that social practice, protest, political awareness. He forces every single one of his students to read all these books about the importance of that. And so it was, and then he honored us with his first ever book of poetry. So that was an amazing part.
No, and it was wonderful working with Hugh. I mean, Hugh has connections directly to Allen Ginsberg when he was at Yale, Devine, John Cage, all of those type of characters he knew and hung out with. And in fact, he tells this wonderful story. I'm not even going to try to tell the story the way that he does. But essentially, Ginsberg told him after reading, you know, a poem that Hugh had written, you know, keep painting.
Well, and then in the introduction of his book, he says, but then Jeanette Powers told me, write. I was like,
But his book is great because it combines his wonderful poetry with his sketches, which are just littered throughout the entire text. So it's a hybrid art poetry book. And those are the kind of things that, you know, we like to focus on and hope to do more of in the future.
Well, I was very impressed, I must say.
Thank you.
Because I only knew some of the people represented, and as I went through your website going, oh, wow, wow kept being my reaction. I was totally the Facebook emoji.
That's exactly how we feel about the poets and authors and painters that we work with. It's just, wow, there's so much tremendous work out there.
And so much, you can help support local arts with a lot of this. That's one of those things, you know, that think globally, act locally. There are a lot of incredible talented people right now in Kansas City, in all of the arts. Even in some of the arts, you don't even know where arts. Like tap dance.
No, and that's what's been amazing to me. I spent pretty much from the end of 2010 up until about October of 2015 just on the road, by 42 different states. I went to Occupy movements in Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle, NATO protests in Chicago, Occupy Wall Street in New York, Madison. I was all over the country pretty much living out of my car for 5 years. And to come back to Kansas City and to find that there is this type of movement in the poetry scene and this much talent here is extremely encouraging. And I think then that's why I've made my roots here again after being gone for about 5 years. So
it's a good place for it. Well, we have given Max a break over the last several minutes to help prepare to deliver us some words of beauty and ugliness. So give us your title and just go right into it.
All right. My poem is the very last poem in the book. It's titled St. Jude Thaddeus. You made me, this way from the dirt floors of your childhood home, shards of your mother who left you with an empty table. You taught me to be the biggest tomato, and how to gut fish so that I'd be a hunter too. You told me stories of picking strawberries for 5 cents a quart and how the oldest of the litter has to take care of the baby. You helped me fall in love with love and gave me enough courage to fill a room, even enough to tell you when I've had enough with you. You're the kind of guy who chose war before it chose you, the same guy who chose war for me. Now I'm staring down the barrel of a loaded gun, your fingers on the trigger, and it seems you can't remember that I was the daughter you once prayed endlessly for. My cause is lost to you. For out in the cornfields, faggots keep quiet.
So, St. Jude Thaddeus was?
The patron saint of lost causes.
With the candle on his head. Little candle flame.
Right. I remember doing social activism for LGBT rights when I was in my very late teens and early 20s, and my dad told me that was my patron saint. My dad's a Catholic guy. So, he identified me with St. Jude Thaddeus, and I was always trying to figure out why my causes were lost if I kept winning.
Interesting. a slight dichotomy there. So, what moment was it that really brought you to framing it in this way?
There have been a whole series of things. You know, it's tough to be told that you choose a life that is harder. It's absolutely not the truth. You know, I think that after so many times of not being considered when decisions are being made because my lifestyle doesn't necessarily reflect reality for somebody who's not exposed all the time to different types of people, different walks of life constantly, I couldn't help but use that as my armor, you know.
Words do tend to make a better shield than a weapon a lot of the time. Quote from Dorothy Parker. I think you built up a good shield there. You've given something to think about, which I think is something to think and feel about, which is one of the things I think poetry should do and does better than just about anything else. Why that one to close the book?
Well, what I love...
He said, turning to the editor.
I believe it was actually J.D.'s decision to close it, so he'll probably have something to speak on this, too. But for me, what's so important about Max's piece is that he's saying we're supposed to be quiet. And he was commenting in the green room that so many of the pieces throughout the book talk about how we're supposed to be silent. And that's exactly what the power structure wants us and everyone to do. Is just quiet down, suffer through, hunker down, and that's exactly why it's so important not to do that. And so even within that sad ending, and I saw we were both teary-eyed at the end of it, because we've all been there. We've been told, hush, and we've been told that our voices don't matter. And so it was just so intense because it resonates with that negativity and the name calling and the sense of ownership of your body where it becomes this thing that even in your family's eyes is something somehow to be looked down upon, and that questioning of yourself that has to go through. And in some ways, I think that's what makes the marginalized voices incredibly interesting, because they've had to break through that boundary of being told to hush and being told that they're not worth anything. And then they've had to find that within themselves and push through it, and it gives that suffering and it gives that urgency and that passion to the words, and so it just is really powerful. Thank you, Max.
Thank you.
But I mean, that's exactly why, not to take credit, but why I put that last. I mean, what better, more powerful line to end the entire anthology on? And, you know, our voices will be heard, our voices will not be marginalized, and you know, this demagogic rhetoric that pits people against people. I mean, that is the intent of, you know, any megalomaniac like that. I mean, if we are fighting against each other, then how are we going to fight in unison against the policies being dictated and imposed upon us by, you know, someone who has ambitions of being a dictator?
But the new idea is that we're giving voice to the forgotten people. And I had to think, what about the people who have been ignored, the people who have been belittled? Where do the rest of us stand in that picture? It's like, oh, the forgotten people have gotten the treatment that they've been giving to everybody else, or feel like they have. So,
exactly.
Yeah, let's honor them, by all means. I don't understand it myself. All right, so we've got a few more minutes. I'd love to have more poetry. Can we have some poetry from Jeanette?
We can. I did not include any of my own work in this book, so I'm going to read some of the pieces that I find to be most powerful. And right now, M.G. Salazar, one of the editors, has a 2-week sabbatical from her job so that she can write her new book. And instead of doing that, she actually has gone back to Standing Rock, which is still a very important protest that's going on, especially in light of the new administration. So I'd love to read M.G. Salazar's poem, My Ancestor's Blood. I have been to many countries. I have been on 4 continents. Rambling the world is my activity of choice. I am asked how I am. I am asked for directions. I am asked what restaurant is good. I am asked how to work this coffee machine. I am asked where I got my coat. I don't always understand these questions, the languages in which they're delivered, but I understand a look of kinship. And the only place I've ever been told to go home is on the land that holds my ancestors' blood.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? I mean, I know what I find in that. What do you find in that one?
For me, it's this, you know, and MG is absolutely a world traveler, and they...
And currently traveling, we might also add, back to Dakota.
Yes, absolutely. And so what is so hurtful about it is that the invaders, from a large perspective, I mean, the white man is an imperialist, or the, you know, European white man, let's say. And so the invaders going to this soul who's both Native American and Latinx of descent, and saying to this person, go home, who actually has such a deeper genealogical history of here, it's just so deeply hypocritical and so unbelievably hurtful, too, because it just reeks of ignorance and racism and hate.
I, of course, in my effort to try to find anything to find some humor in, try to make myself desperately, try to make myself laugh out of things, I responded to someone who said, well, people who come here should learn the language. And I responded, yeah, there are about 400 languages you could have learned, and you didn't. You stuck with what you knew. I can give you a few words in Choctaw if that'll help you. You can try to get along. But the kind of thing that we're finding more and more in the open. And I think it's the openness of all of that that has particularly driven to disturb me.
And what you were saying earlier about the forgotten voice that was, you know, that silent middle that got Trump elected is, okay, I feel like I'm really sorry that you guys weren't getting to spew your hatred and racism and destruction of families and threatening behavior for all these years. Oh, well, I'm sorry, we actually moved forward into a compassionate, peaceful, fair, ethical world, and you're angry? You feel like you've been abused because you can't just say, oh, you like girls, Jeanette, so you can't be part of my family and you can't be part of my community anymore? I'm sorry that's erasing me. I'm sorry that you feel like you can't say that. And I'm afraid that more and more, with the way that Trump treats everyone in these kind of dismissive ways, treats marginalized people in these dismissive ways, that middle is going to feel like they are empowered to speak. And we see it every day.
Including local incidents of people getting cars spray painted.
Absolutely.
Which was just horrifying the more I've read about that, so I had to stop. Because once again, it was all just going to come out of my eyes.
Or even more, just friends and neighbors, people that you didn't think were that way, but now they've just been given a license to engage in bigotry and to make it vocal. And, I mean, it's pitted families against families. I mean, we've read all kinds of articles. I mean, there's been a lengthy series in the Washington Post about, especially around Thanksgiving, you know, extensive interviews of family members going home to visit their families or choosing not to go home because of, you know, the way Trump has pitted people against each other and family members and friends and neighbors and relatives.
And they did one piece on This American Life that was about that very thing, about family members who will no longer communicate with one another on Facebook They'll grudgingly be around each other in person, but rarely. But just because of differences, they believe that means they cannot communicate with anyone outside themselves. It all has to do with the artist who expresses himself in words. That's what we've got. We've got words, we've got actions, we've got things we can create with and for one another. Why wouldn't you want to do that? It's a question I can't answer. I don't see anybody else rushing to the microphone.
Either.
Rhetorical.
Maybe Jeanette for a moment could speak to the our inclusion of the wonderful photos by Jenny Wise from the Pine Ridge Reservation, which is also...
Actually, Max brought those photos to us. So
maybe Max can give us some more background on that.
Jenny Wise, I refer to her lovingly at my place of employment as my bicycle girlfriend. She's exactly too old for me. Sorry, Jenny. But Jenny is a KCAI graduate. I have known her to work in design and is, like I said, a really passionate bicyclist. And over a course of conversations that we had, she had told me that she hadn't really been making. And I saw this photograph of a Native man cleaning a gun on her Facebook. And when Art Uprising was happening, I encouraged her to submit. And she wasn't sure, and she waffled a little bit back and forth, trying to find the thing that she felt like would speak the best to the project. And lo and behold, she gifted us with, I think, 5 or 6 extraordinary photos. The front of the book is depicted with sort of a mountaintop I believe it's on the Lakota Sioux Reservation, and it's all black and gray, and it seems just as desolate as I think some of the people feel right now in response. You know, this project was just a wonderful opportunity, and I'm so excited for my friend and my peers that had the chance to become a part of it.
And when we chose to go with the photographs that reflected the Native American experience, in part, it's because they're unbelievably gorgeous and powerful, but also because I want to remind America of the genocide that happened against the Native American people. It is not like this is new. It is not like it hasn't happened before. And I know there were people who did not like what was happening then. Their voices were marginalized. Their voices were put down. The powerful overtook it and said, we will have this because we have steam, guns, germs, and steel, to quote the very wonderful book. And so people should be reminded of this, and these photographs go a long way to saying this is not so far away and it can happen again.
Well, it's because people think that Donald Trump's small fingers indicate he's got smallpox. And on that note, if people want to find the book, once again, they can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble,
IndieBound.org.
I wanted to say Indie Book, and I was like, nah, that's
our website is 39westpress.com.
You can find lots of information about it there. If people want more information about Jeanette Powers or to follow her powersful words, how would they do so?
Well, I love it if you just find me on social media, Jeanette Powers, as in magical. And then I have JeanettePowers.com.
JD?
The 39 West Press website would probably be the best way to reach me. I'm kind of a social media phobe, so.
I noticed that. Nice.
I'm all over social media. Max Martin on Facebook. You can also follow me on Instagram. There's some really interesting photos from last night, by the way. The tag is Shameless Max.
Wonderful. If you continue to stay tuned, we'll also be talking with another publisher and author, the fabulous Isabella. Elizabeth will be bringing her to us. But first, some words of wisdom.
The second annual Kansas City Folk Festival is back Sunday, February 19th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Westin Crown Center Hotel. This one-day, all-ages indoor event is for music lovers, families, and art appreciators looking for a summer festival vibe in the dead of winter. Supporting KKFI, Kansas City Folk Festival features an artisan market, children's programming, an Irish dance, a morning sing-along, as well as local, national, and international artists on multiple stages. Featuring headline performances by blues man Bobby Rush, guitarist David Wilcox, Puerto Rican songwriter Ani Cordero, and UK artist and activist Billy Bragg. Tickets and information about the February 19th Kansas City Folk Festival, kcfolkfest.org.
KKFI will not be airing This Way Out and Wings today so that we may bring you special coverage of the Women's March on Washington. That's 2 to 3 today, right after the 10th Voice.
Ron. Try again. Hello? Is Chris, you're on?
Yeah,
okay.
I am.
Elizabeth's getting hooked up so she can hear you. Here you go,
okay,
Elizabeth.
And what's your name again?
That was Linda Wilson. She's our producer.
Okay, great.
And she's been with the show since 1989, so kind of a dab hand with it. This is Elizabeth, and I want to welcome you on this show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the reason I invited you is you had the most interesting post on Facebook, and then the responses I found very heartwarming. You called it a rant, but I thought it was so well written. And I want to explain that you are the CEO, publisher of Sapphire Books, and also an author.
I am.
And would you explain a little about why you wrote the post?
You know, there's been discussion in other Facebook groups about the price of authors' ebooks, and somebody had posted, sent me a message saying that they thought our ebooks were too expensive. And so this is kind of one of those catch-22s where you want to reach an audience and yet, you know, you do the best work you can, and then somebody says, oh, I'd buy more of your books, but they're just too expensive for me. And so that really kind of struck a chord with me.
It did with me, too. I believe I saw that discussion. And I found it personally, I'm not even an author, and I found it upsetting because the person wasn't saying, I can't afford. It was nobody should ever price books this way. And it's...
Right. And you know, one of the things I'd like to say is Sapphire gives a lot of ebooks away for free. You know, we don't want anybody to not be able to enjoy our authors. And so we do give a lot of ebooks away for free.
And I did find so many of the responses, and there were quite a few, really interesting, and people made wonderful points. One pointed out that she knew of an author who quit writing because of harassment, and some of the harassment was about book prices. And she wrote in USA Today, slow down, enjoy the words, pay for books. If you are driving the market, don't drive it into the gutter. Have respect for your time, for the authors, for family. And remember, authors can write without readers all for themselves, but readers need authors. Don't hurt them. And I know that Sapphire Books is very supportive of authors. In fact, how many do you have on your roster right now?
We have 34 authors right now.
And you do a variety of genres, right?
We do. We've published our first lesbian memoir this year of a woman called Out, a woman's courageous journey of a woman who came out at 60. We have everything from sci-fi to romance to mystery, intrigue, erotica. So we pretty much cover the spectrum in lesbian literature.
I think many people just don't understand the journey that a book takes, whether it's a well-written self-published book or whether it's through a traditional publisher or whether it's through a small publisher. Could you tell us a little about what goes into the publishing of a book? And you know both sides because you're both an author and a publisher.
Sure. You know, I think one of the things that people don't realize is sometimes an author can take up to a year, maybe even longer, to write a book. It's sometimes an organic process that takes time. And there's research that goes into it from the author's perspective. You know, there's a whole process for an author to write that book. So by the time we get it, they could have spent a year writing that book. And that's a lot of time and labor and work on their part. Then we get it, and we assign them an editor who goes through, and they have a back and forth that could take a month or longer to edit a book. And so we do the editing process. Once it comes out of the editing process, our process is we send it to our book designer, who then puts her hands on it and designs the book, lays it out, sets it all up, and the print copy we send off to proofers to go through and proof the books. So they use the Chicago Manual of Style, and they're going line by line by line through a book to look for errors, to look for inconsistencies, or maybe something that doesn't fit either the Chicago Manual of Style or the Sapphire Style Guide. It comes back to the book designer for changes, and usually they're minor changes. The book designer will make minor changes. And if they're questionable changes, then we send it back to the author for them, their input, to make those changes. It goes back to the book designer who incorporates those changes, and then it goes back to the author for one more final read through before we send it off to, you know, printers and ebook setup and things like that. So there's a lot of hands that touch that book before it even ever hits the market.
I think many people also don't realize how much thought and talent goes into designing a book cover.
No, and that's the other piece that I left out was we have a book, you know, we have a graphic artist who has a back and forth with the author as well. So that could be a very quick process if the graphic designer hits it out of the park, or that could be another two or three back and forths between the author and the book designer or the cover designer. So that's another piece of the process that really gets overlooked. You know, we are probably into a book easily, before we even do PR or any advertising, over $1,500 into a book before it ever sees the market. And that's before PR, advertising, anything else.
I do understand readers having budgets. Some may be unemployed, some may be underemployed, medical expenses, whatever the reason, some people just can't afford them. And I wanted to say that you do give books away. There are a number of groups, the Hootenanny is one, that give quite a few books away. And there are libraries, and I know many people who will read a book and then go buy more books by that author. So that's an avenue. And there's also barter or trade. That doesn't help the author initially, but I've known many people who have traded books with their friends or had a little book sale, and then they go get all the author's books.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I wanted to ask next about is I know of people, because they've said so online, they don't think piracy is a big problem. They say, well, it's just me. And I just like to get the books for free. I think it's extremely hurtful to the industry. Would you address that?
Sure. I can tell you on one side alone. So if one person said, oh, it's just one book, or oh, it's just me, it's you times 1,000 people, or you times, 2,000 people. One piracy site alone, I went through and looked at the downloads, because almost all of our books were on this particular piracy site. We lost $9,000 if the downloads were correct. And those were just the downloads that they said this title's been downloaded X amount of times. And so we could, by looking at how many times that book had been downloaded, and of course we send takedown notices, and, you know, I spotlight those people who've downloaded a lot. And a lot of piracy sites say if this is illegal or if someone's put it up illegal, we'll kick them out. So I try to identify those people who have posted the book on the piracy site. It cost us just that in that one site $10,000, and that was over a year ago. So I can just imagine what the impact just, and we're a small publishing company. I can just imagine what the impact is across the spectrum of piracy sites.
This is just an alarming trend, and not just in publishing, but also people ripping off musicians, filmmakers, mm-hmm. and so I wanted to have you on to give people an idea of the amount of creativity and time and effort that goes into publishing one book. And you also do a lot in the field. Could you tell a little about your annual conference and also the cruise?
Sure. We teamed up this year with Olivia Travel to do Literary Adventures at Sea on their Alaska cruise at the end of June 2017. We've been very fortunate to get really wonderful keynote speakers such as Dorothy Allison, Karen Callmaker, and Jennifer Fulton has come out of retirement to participate in this. You may remember Jennifer Fulton writes under Grace Lennox and several other pen names. And we've teamed with Olivia to put together a literary component to their cruise. We have quite a few Sapphire authors who are going to be there. Lucy J. Madison. We have Shelley Thrasher from Bold Strokes. Lee Lynch is going to be there as well. And myself, Sheila Powell. So quite a few authors are going to be on the cruise. And we were really fortunate to be able to do that. A lot of exciting things are happening for Sapphire. We also do the Left Coast Lesbian Conference in October in Palm Springs. This was kind of sprung out of a lot of things happen on the East Coast, but very few lesbian literature things happen on the West Coast. So our solution was to start a conference, and we have had some extraordinary keynote speakers. We've had Amanda Kyle Williams, who's a New York Times bestselling author for her Key Street series. We've had Ellen Hart and her Jane Lawless series, who now is going to be the Master of Ceremonies for the Mystery Conference. And then we've also had Lee Lynch this last year as a keynote speaker. So we've been very fortunate to have some pretty wonderful keynote speakers. The conference is open to everybody from authors to readers, and it really is it's an intimate conference, and it's a way for readers and authors to connect.
We're actually going to do an Ellen Hart book probably this summer. Our producer, Linda Wilson, is picking one out, and it's exciting that she was just named a Grand Master by the Mystery Writers of America.
Mm-hmm. And she's fantastic. I can only tell you that. One of the great things about our conference is that the authors all mix and mingle, and that includes the keynote speakers, so that they get to be in a kind of unguarded environment, and you can talk to them about the craft, you can talk to them about other things that a lot of times at conferences you just don't get that opportunity to do.
I wanted to mention, too, the Golden Crown Literary Society. You and Sapphire are very active at that, too, and there's a conference coming up in July in Chicago.
That's true. A lot of our authors attend that. We have a couple of authors who are on the board, and I'll probably be mentoring authors through their mentorship program with the Writers Academy. So we're very involved within the lesbian literature community at large.
Wonderful. Where could someone find out information about Sapphire, and where could one learn about you and your writing?
Sure. You can find Sapphire at www.sapphirebooks.com. All of our books and authors are listed there, so if you have a favorite. If you sign up for our newsletter, whoever signs up for our newsletter gets a free ebook of their choice. So that's another way we try and encourage people to check out Sapphire authors. It doesn't cost them anything. They sign up for our newsletter and they get a free ebook out of the deal.
And you're active on Facebook. I know I've seen you there.
I am. I have a book, Razor's Edge, coming out in April. So it's kind of that exciting time for me, because as we gear up for that, it starts to become a little overwhelming. And there's a lot going on Facebook right now with the Women's March and everything that's going on.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today and taking time out of your Saturday. And unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I hope that you'll return sometime.
Well, I appreciate the offer. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. And thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been the 10th Voice, and Elizabeth and I are going to be leaving here momentarily to join the Women's March at Washington Park here in Kansas City.
And you listeners can join the Washington, D.C. March, because Wings and This Way Out will be preempted for the Washington, D.C. March. So if you want to stay tuned, you can hear audio from that.
And you'll hear it right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thanks for listening.
We will
now broadcast.
We will now join the march in Washington.
Live from the Women's March on Washington.
You guys still fired up? You guys ready to march? All right, we almost there. Be patient, sisters and brothers. We are about to shut Washington, D.C. down.